celebrate the 88th year of the founding of AA in Akron, Ohio, with this 1988 version of Joe and Charlie, brought to you by the big book livingalive.com.
And now we can see, you know, how Alcoholics Anonymous has unfolded. Now, these 100 people picked up these ideas. They came from Dr. Silkworth, Dr. Yoon. They came from the Oxford group. They came into Bill's mind. Bill was the first one to know all three of them. And these nebulous little ideas or concepts, they passed them around, and as they grew, they got 40 people sober. When they got 40 people sober, they said, hey, these things work. We ought to write a book and send these other people. And by the time they got the book finished, they had 100 people. So their little program, these 100 people put their program in this book. And there were a lot of discussions on what to call, what to name it. They finally named it Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay, and then once the book was named Alcoholics Anonymous, then these 100 people said, you know, we're going to call ourselves Alcoholics Anonymous. So the people, the fellowship, took their name off the book. So there are really two Alcoholics Anonymous. The first one is a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And then as this book went out across the country, it created a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. Now we know, and this is what we, so there are really two Alcoholics Anonymous. Now in 1939, there wasn't any problem because the people in the fellowship practiced the program that was in the book because that was their program. Now we know that the book has been unchanged. We know we have not changed the book as it was written in 1939, but the fellowship has changed. You know, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, every time somebody bring in a little something new and bring, you know, we people tend to change. You know, we people tend to change. Thank God that we still have our program in the book. You know, Charlie and I, we always talk about, you go to some meetings, you don't know where you at. I mean, I don't know what kind of meetings they are, you know. They say don't drink, and you put the plug in the jug, and none of that's in here, you know. But we bring in so many new things that we say them over and over. We think they're part of the program. So I think, you know, what we're going to be talking about this weekend is not the program in the fellowship, but the program in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I take that challenge in my group. I like to really listen to my group and see where we are today. I like to listen to my group and what goes on in my group and compare. What goes on in my group with the big book, with the real program, Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think that this is what we're going to be discussing, not the fellowship Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to be discussing the program in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, when this program, and when the program in the fellowship and the program in the big book were the same many years ago, and this, we don't know, and I think that's what we hear all about, these big books, to get us back in the fellowship, back into the program in the book. That's what's so vital, because that is what produced the fellowship, and that's the strength of the fellowship. But back on Roman numeral XX, it says, start at the top, it says, AA grew by leaps and bounds. But there were two principal reasons. The large numbers of recoveries and united homes. These made their impressions everywhere. When AA first started out, how it grew. Of the alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. Now, when the program in the fellowship was practiced, the program in the book, it says 75% of the people who came to AA eventually got sober, and others showed improvement. And, you know, if you would look at the fellowship today, I wonder, are we getting 75% of the people who come to AA are getting sober? And we hear the figures, like maybe less than 10% of the people who come to AA are getting the program. And so if we could get our groups back into the program in the book, you know, we could go back to this same type of recovery that they had in the early days when they were applying the program in the big book within the groups.
I think the important thing in this forward to the second edition, it's a very brief history of the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a very brief history of the beginning of the book itself. We could see very easily where Bill had visited with Dr. Silkworth, and Dr. Silkworth had explained to Bill the disease, and Bill learned what his problem really was. from Dr. Silkworth. This was clear back in 1933. You know, Bill had thought it was willpower. He had thought it was moral character. He had thought it was sin. And why would he not? That's what everybody had told him. Dr. Silkworth was the first one to say, I don't believe it's any of those things. I think it's a disease of the body as well as a disease of the mind. A physical allergy coupled with an obsession of the mind. And for the first time in his life, Bill understood what his problem was. And as we go through Bill's story this weekend, we're going to be able to see when that happened. And we're going to see that Bill took that information and still went out and got drunk again. And then went back in the town's hospital again. And that the doctor there pronounced him incurable. And we're going to see that Bill stayed sober for a little bit on fear. But we're also going to see that on Armistice Day 1934, Bill got drunk again. You see, he knew the problem, but he didn't know the solution. And you can't solve any problem until you understand the solution, and you can't really apply a solution until you understand the problem. So Bill, all of his information prior to Dr. Silkworth had been false information. And Dr. Silkworth gave him the true information, but he still didn't know what to do about it. And you can see in the foreword of the second edition where this friend of his, Ebby, visited with him. And Ebby brought him the other two pieces of the puzzle. We'll see that in Bill's story. We'll see where Ebby brought him the idea of the need for a power greater than human power, or what they referred to as a vital spiritual experience. The power of a being greater than human power to overcome the power of alcoholism itself. And then we can see where Ebby gave him the tenets, the steps, the guidelines, whatever you wanted to call them, from the Oxford groups. And he said, Bill, if you will practice these steps or guidelines or tenets in your life, you can find that power greater than human power. And then you can overcome the disease of alcoholism. And Bill was probably the first human being to really understand all three of these things. What the problem was, what the solution was, and a practical program of action necessary to find that solution. And sure enough, Bill applied it in his life, and he recovered from the disease. And then we can see when he came to Akron. Now, people like to think Bill came to Akron purposely to see Dr. Bob, and that isn't true. In fact, they call him a broker in here. I'm not sure that's too true either. Bill was a speculator. He was a manipulator. He was a true, true alcoholic, a real alcoholic. And he'd come to Akron on a business trip, and they were going to take over a company. And he was going to get to be the president of the company. And he was here on this deal. And while here, the deal fell through. And Bill felt very depressed, and he almost got drunk. And in desperation, he remembered how in New York City, even though he had never helped anybody, every time he had tried to help another drunk, he felt better. Now, to keep himself from getting drunk, he made a few phone calls, which eventually led him to Dr. Bob. And then he sat down and explained to Dr. Bob the exact nature of his illness. You see, Dr. Silkworth had said, Bill, every alcoholic I know wants to know two things. Why can't I drink like I used to and still have fun? And why can't I quit now that I want to quit? And he said, if you will explain to them what I explained to you, you will get their interest. And he said, then you can talk to them about spiritual matters. And Bill sits down with this well-known surgeon and tells the surgeon what's wrong with his body and what's wrong with his mind. That blows my mind today to even think about that. Now, normally the doctor would have said, who in the hell are you to be telling me? But the message had such depth and interest that Dr. Bob bought into it immediately. To Bill's amazement, he found that Dr. Bob had already been going to the Oxford groups and had already been trying to have this spiritual experience. But he'd been unable to apply it in his life to the depth necessary to recover because he didn't know what the problem really was. You see, he thought it was sin, moral character, and willpower also. And when he learned the exact nature of the illness, then he began to apply the tenets of the Oxford group in his life to an extent he never had before. And lo and behold, he had a vital spiritual experience, and he recovered also. We can see in this foreword of the second edition where they immediately went to the Akron City Hospital and talked to another drunk, a fellow named Bill Dodson. And they sat down and explained to him three things. They told him what his problem was, what the solution was, and what the practical program of action was. And Bill Dodson began to apply it in his life, and he recovered from the disease. Then they worked that summer with other people, and eventually Bill went back to New York City. And unbeknownst to him, he had left behind him what was to later become the first group of Alcoholics Anonymous. In New York City, he continued to work with drunks, but this time always explaining to them first the exact nature of the illness. Tell them what their problem is, and then giving them a solution to that problem. And some of those people recovered, and unbeknownst to them, they were forming what was to later become the second group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there was a bunch of drunks up in Cleveland who had heard about these strange dudes down here in Akron. And they came down and talked to the Akron people to see what was going on. And the Akron people told them three things. They told them what their problem is, what the solution is, and the practical program of action necessary to find it. They went back to Cleveland, and the next thing you know, one, two, three, four of them began to recover. And they were forming what was to later be the third group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, in 1937, Bill was here again. Now, again, not to see Dr. Moth. He was here on the same business deal. Boy, he didn't want to turn that deal loose. But while here, he thought, well, I'll go by and see Bob. And he and Bob were visiting in Dr. Bob's house. And I think that's the day they realized that maybe, just maybe, we have found the answer to this thing called alcoholism. Just maybe the knowledge that we have gained can avert death in literally thousands of people. And at that time, there was 40 people sober in these three little groups. I just almost bet money that Dr. Bob turned to Bill and said, Bill, what do you think we ought to do about this? And I'd almost bet money that Bill said, beats the hell out of me, Bob. What do you think? They decided they wouldn't make that decision themselves, and they called what was probably the first group conscious meeting in AA. They called a meeting of those sober here in Akron, and there was 18 people there at that meeting. And there's where they made the decision. To take this information that they had gained, to put it down in a written form, and put it in a book, so that it would remain the same and not become garbled. Of course, there were other reasons for it, too. One was to make money. But you see, the first thing they decided to do that night was build a chain of hospitals. And in this chain of hospitals, on the first floor, they might withdraw them from alcohol. On the second floor, they would put them into a treatment center where they could teach this information to them. On the third floor, they may have something else going on. On the fourth floor, they were going to have a retraining area where they could take we alcoholics who had lost our jobs and retrain us for new occupations. And we always laugh about that because we don't know any alcoholics that need to be retrained. You know, most of us have got three or four occupations already. You got to have if you're a practicing alcoholic or you can't exist. So. Now, that was going to take money. And also, they had decided at that meeting to hire and train a group of missionaries. And they were going to send them worldwide. And they would carry this great message of recovery to the alcoholic wherever he might be. Now, that's going to take a hell of a lot of money. And one of the reasons for writing the book was to make the money to do these two things with. Because they just knew that it would sell and make literally millions of dollars. Thank God it didn't sell very good in the beginning. And we never got involved in those other two things. All AA finally did was write the book. But I think the important thing about this whole little history is this. The first Alcoholics Anonymous was a book. And that book contained the knowledge and the experience of the first 100 people who had recovered from this disease. And it contained the little practical program of action necessary to recover from the disease. They put in the book what they had done. Now, at that time, they didn't have a name. They were referred to, in some cases, as the drunk squads of the Oxford groups. Had various other different names, and some of them not quite that nice. Then they took their name, Alcoholics Anonymous, off the book. And today, when you say the words Alcoholics Anonymous, we think of a great, great gathering of people. But the first Alcoholics Anonymous was a book, which contained a program of recovery used by the first 100 people. And then when the book went out, so many people picked it up and used it that the fellowship began to grow by leaps and bounds. So the fellowship as we know it now came from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's very ironic that the program in the book has remained exactly the same, but that in the fellowship has changed almost completely. You know, you hear statements like, all you got to do is go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, that's a good idea. I see nothing wrong with that. But that really isn't all you have to do to recover from the disease. I hear statements such as you can treat this as a cafeteria, and you can take what you want and leave what you want. I don't find that anywhere in the big book. There are statements that say the real killer is, if you come to meetings long enough, you'll soak it up by osmosis and you'll be all right. Now, I know that's a lie, because I tried that for about 2 or 3 years, and I damn near died from the disease of alcoholism.
If you enjoyed this episode of Joe and Charlie from Akron in 1988, and would like to hear other versions, different seminars from different years, please visit our website, BigBookLivingAlive.com.